Good afternoon. I'm Representative Connie Bernardi, and welcome to the Higher Education, Finance, and Policy Committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Higher Education, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright. Representative Albright. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Erickson, present. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Daniels, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman, present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleavorne.
Cleavorne, present.
Cleavorne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Kreshaw.
Representative will be late.
Okay. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Present.
Meckland, present. Representative Knorr.
Knorr, present.
Nor present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. Representative Albright. And Representative Mason. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 24th, 2021?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
Representative Sandsted moves approval of the minutes for February 24th. Any discussion? Okay, please be sure your mute is off. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Aye. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 24th, 2021 are approved. We have one of our committee members here to present a bill to us today, and we also have a visitor to our committee. We will have two bills today, House File 10. Well, 1006 from Representative Knorr, and followed by House File 825 from Representative Lee. Both of these bills support programs that help low-income students prepare for college. We heard earlier this session from both Dr. Corey and the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership about the cost of our state's higher education disparities, and I'm thankful that we have members looking to bring forward legislation to address these opportunities and disparities gaps. We will give each author a chance to introduce their bill, followed by additional testimony, and then finally, we will have time for member discussion and questions. Representative Knorr, I would like to move your House File 1006 to be laid over for possible inclusion. So now we have before us House File 1006, Representative Knorr. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1006 is the Summer Academic Enrichment Program. This bill allocates $500,000 for fiscal year 2022 and $500,000 for fiscal year 2023. Madam Chair and members, this is a great program that supports low-income students from grades 3 to 11. who attend summer academic programs. Madam Chair and members, this is more designed to help students connect with post-secondary education programs that help them catch up and keep up and accelerate their education program. This is a great opportunity for those students who are lagging behind to get an opportunity to be introduced to the higher education or post-secondary education. This is a great program that supports the enrichment during summertime. We know that during the COVID-19, that there's been a significant setback, not only during the summer program, but also during the regular school program. And this year, it's more important for us to invest in supporting the kids so that they can catch up and keep up with their education and also introduce them to higher education. For many kids who have been doing distance learning, there's been a struggle. And for them to get this opportunity in the next upcoming summer and also continuous program, it's not only about keeping up and catching up, it's about helping them succeed to be able to see themselves in post-secondary education. Madam Chair and members, to qualify for this program as a stipend, you have to be a resident of Minnesota, attend an eligible post-secondary approved program, third, be in grade 3 through 12, as I stated, and not to have completed a high school. You have to meet the free and reduced meal requirement to qualify for the program, and you must be 19 years of age or younger. I have seen this program work in various places, including at Augsburg University and other places during the summertime. With that, Madam Chair, I do have testifiers who are going to be explaining this bill, how it has impacted them, and how it has worked for many of the students that I just talked about.
Thank you, Representative Noor. Did you want to start out with Dr. Robert Johnson?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, welcome to the committee, Dr. Robert Johnson. If you could please state your name and your affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Johnson from St. Cloud, Minnesota, and I am a retired faculty member at St. Cloud State University. I was the founder of summer programs back in 1987, and this precedes the formal start of the summer academic enrichment program, but there were various sources of support from state and federal sources to encourage the development of such programs. In 1986, I approached Dr. Nancy Walters, who was with the Office of Higher Education and the Department of Education, about starting a pilot project that would target students that are underrepresented in science fields, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, what we know as STEM fields. And Dr. Walters is now retired, but Dr. Walters is a very dedicated and passionate advocate for opportunities for underserved students. She was also a very capable and competent public servant. And so, and she's African-American and a woman with a science background. So when I approached her with the idea of starting a program for low-income students of color, female students, she was very receptive. Why? Because she understood the need and the issues that students from these groups faced. They were severely underrepresented in these fields in the 1980s and the decades before, and continue to be so even today. So with her assistance, we started a pilot program in the summer of 1987. And since that time, that program has grown to include thousands of students, from 96% of whom are from Minnesota. And I've shared with the staff member some of the data and statistics and information over that period of time between the 1980s up to the time that I retired. Probably 2017, 2018, and we can update that even more so if you insist, and I'll put down my retirement. Tools and pick up some of those other skills. But nonetheless, what we had the distinction at that time of being one of the first and few programs that was residential in nature. That is, the students actually came to St. Cloud State University, spent time on the campus, in the dormitories, used campus facilities, labs, classrooms, cafeteria, one of their favorite places, athletic facilities, and the like. They were instructed by college professors. We did field trips where they interacted with professionals in the different fields, and we were assisted by college students, graduate and undergraduate students, who served as mentors, counselors, and the like. So these students had a very immersive experience on the college campus, hands-on experience with the disciplines of science, various aspects of computer applications, mathematics, and the like. Over the course of these 30 plus years, we've tracked these students, and we find that they, a good number of them, continue on to pursue higher education. And a good number of those who pursue higher education also elect the STEM disciplines as their major. And many of them will then go on to pursue careers in these fields. And this is generally at a higher level than what we would expect if they had not participated in this program. When we compare them to the state average for their peers and the national average for their peers, we find that there's a higher participation rate than we would expect from the data on state and national cohorts. I was asked to present to your companion committee or a committee last week in the Senate. And at the time, I didn't have the materials at hand, but I titled that remark. I said, if I had prepared a statement, it would be entitled "An Investment or the Investment That Keeps on Giving." And I noticed that when I testified before that committee in 2017, the last slide that I shared with that group was something that said something about an investment. And so what I've realized in talking to parents and students and looking at the news in recent weeks, and this is before this, I was aware that this bill was coming up, but in talking to parents, they informed me that their students, one student, for example, who was a participant in our program, was just recently admitted to a medical school. And before that, he was a graduate student at the University of Minnesota in biomedical engineering. And this was, I think he started in 2018 and 2019 and finishing up or his master's degree there. And he's studying, he's developing mathematical models of diseases. Now, is that relevant to today? Yes. We have many people studying COVID using mathematical models to predict its impact on the society at large and different groups. So here's a young man with an interest in this field before the urgency or the need for such a approach was known to most of us. This young man has been accepted to medical school, and his mother informed me that he told her that he plans to come back to St. Cloud and to set up a community practice here to address the needs of low-income residents here in St. Cloud and in central Minnesota. I have two other examples. Recently, we've had people speak out about the discrepancies and disparities that take place in terms of health care for among Minnesotans, and how people of color, low-income citizens, tend to be more affected by certain diseases, especially COVID, and less likely to get the kind of treatment that would help them cope with these problems. And this is Dr. Rachel Hardiman, and another scholar, and she's at the University of Minnesota. Another scholar is Dr. Star Sage at University of St. Thomas, who's also addressing health equity issues. These young women were students, again, in our program, and in one of the documents that I've submitted to the staff member, she's on record indicating how, this is Dr. Starr, Dr. Sage, how her experience in the summer program enabled her to confirm her interest in science and in pursuing a career as a health specialist. And so these young people who started out, these young professionals who started out as young children in a summer program on a college campus have pursued these interests, have pursued careers in these fields, and are here in Minnesota making contributions to the larger community. So the investment in these students, in these young students, have yielded young professionals serving the state of Minnesota. In addition to those students, we have students who are science teachers, students who are community health advocates, we have students who are engineers, we have students who are statisticians, we have students in many, many fields. And then we have students who have chosen not to go into the science or STEM areas. And is that a waste? No. They are more informed citizens about the scientific process, more informed citizens about how research enables us to address societal issues. And so having an informed, scientifically literate body of citizens helps all of us. So again, a lot of details are present in the documentation that I provided to your committee, and I'd be more than happy to speak to any of that material and to talk about the many other benefits of this program. I can say that this program is world renowned. In addition to the large number of students from Minnesota, we have students from across the nation, and we have international students. We have a student, again, the vast majority of our students come from low-income families or from moderate backgrounds. We've had some affluent students who paid their way to the program, and one of those students was accepted to, she applied to, I think, 8 or 9 Ivy League colleges. She was accepted to every one of them. She got early acceptance, I think it was at Princeton, because she presented the research that she did in our summer program, and with it, shortly after that interview, she was granted early admission. She chose Harvard. And she's planning to become a medical doctor as well. My point is that we have here in Minnesota internationally renowned programs that prepare students in our world standard quality environment that allow them to compete with anybody in the world. And this is offered to low-income students, students who are underrepresented, students who will not get the opportunity without the investment that we would make in their futures and in our future. So I can give you example after example, but there's a body of data. So you don't have to rely on these anecdotes, but there's a body of data which show the impact of these programs. And I'll stop there. And if you have questions for me later on, I'll be at your disposal.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Representative Noor, do you have further testifiers?
I believe there are additional testifiers, Madam Chair. Do you have the list of the testifiers?
Well, I have Bob, and I hope his name is Cates, but I'm not certain on the testifiers list.
Yes, I'm here.
And you got Madam Chair.
Okay, if you could introduce yourself and your association, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. You do have the pronunciation right. It's Bob Cates. I have the distinction of being the president and CEO of a nonprofit called Best Prep. This is actually our 45th year anniversary, and I've had the honor to be the CEO since we started. Our mission is to prepare students with business, career, and financial literacy skills through hands-on experiences that inspire success in work and life. And we do that through five in-school programs during the school year and two summer camps. For the past, let me just give you a little broader idea. We serve about 55,000 students statewide and work directly with the schools and with many, many nonprofits to achieve our mission. For the past 9 years, OHE has supported our Minnesota Business Venture summer camps. And these are business and career development camps. The goal of these camps is to provide hope and opportunity to students for a successful career journey. These are week-long camps. We partner for 1 week with the Schultz School of Entrepreneurship at the University of St. Thomas. And the second week is with the McNeely School of Business at St. John's University. So when we are in person, these students have the opportunity through transportation provided and other means to attend these camps. And many of them end up going to those two universities as well as other institutions. Last summer, we made the decision to go virtual, and we decided to go way beyond Zoom with an audiovisual production company. A lot of work, but very successful in providing virtual experiences that were not only group-based, but one-on-one based with students who are mentored. The typical summer has 350 to 400 students, and we anticipate that again over the two sessions. And the OHE funding has actually provided for over 475 low-income students to participate over the last 9 years. It's been a terrific boom to the opportunity, to the point where our underrepresented population at those camps has grown by over 50% since we began receiving support from OHE. And last summer, over 63% of the students were students of color. I relish the opportunity to be here today because I am a huge supporter of the benefit of summer academic enrichment programs. We've done a lot of research and have talked to a lot of people, and there's no question that these experiences help these students, particularly underrepresented students during the summer. And as Dr. Johnson pointed out, this summer is particularly critical. There's many students who have struggled over the distance learning. Many students that have not shown up during distance learning. And so we are trying to unearth these students. We're working with a variety of nonprofits as well as schools to make sure that we can receive these underrepresented students. So I don't want to go into too much detail, and I know you have a lot to go on, but just want to thank the committee for the support, and existing support and increased support will only provide more opportunities for students desperately in need. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And I believe we have two more testifiers with us today, and I just want to confirm that they're here. Mary Kouser?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, excellent. And please state your name and your organization for the record.
Okay, Mary Mouse Kouser, Concordia Language Villages. So Concordia Language Villages is affiliated with Concordia College in Moorhead. We are the premier language and cultural immersion program in the United States, and our culturally authentic village sites are located on 900 acres just outside of Bemidji, Minnesota. Our mission is to inspire courageous global citizenship. We offer 14 different languages in the summer for young people aged 7 to 18 of all levels of proficiency, beginners to advanced speakers. And we offer a variety of residential and now with COVID also virtual 1 week, 2 week, 4 week summer sessions, the latter being the equivalent of one full year of language instruction. Every year, approximately 10,000 youth and adults from across the United States attend Concordia Language Villages. However, a significant percentage of our participants are from the state of Minnesota, youth, families, school groups, and educators. Since 2011, we have had a total of 1,633 Minnesota students in grades 3 to 11 participate in a Language Village summer session with the assistance of an OHE summer enrichment stipend. In 2019, we had over 110 students who took part in Concordia Language Villages and represented 26 counties coming from elementary and secondary schools, both in the Twin Cities metro area and throughout greater Minnesota. Students have ranged in age from 8 to 18. Last summer, unfortunately, we only had a dozen students from the OHE program that took part in our virtual villages, largely due to the last minute nature of changing programs and schedules. The $1,000 OHE stipend ensures that these students without the requisite financial resources can attend Concordia Language Villages. The stipend actually completely covers the tuition for a 1 week virtual session or residential program. And for those students who are interested in participating in a 4 week high school credit session or a 4 week non-credit session, additional financial aid from foundations, grants, and other donations are provided. Some students have participated in cohorts such as Upward Bound and through partnerships that we have with the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board as well. These partnerships have ensured that funds are maximized to the students' benefit, as there were support mechanisms in place to also facilitate attendance at a program that is located in northern Minnesota, from transportation to packing what was needed for the sleepaway camp. So students and parents definitely have received significant funding from OHE over the past decade. And just a couple of quick testimonials from parents and students themselves. One student mentioned after last summer's opportunity, "Thank you for helping to give me the opportunity to spend a year learning Norsk at Skug Forden. So many things that make my life what it is have fallen apart in the past few months, and I cannot emphasize enough how grateful I am to have had the opportunity to connect with friends for what is one of the best parts of my summer." Another student from Mankato who was a recipient of the program said, "Thank you for supporting me with a scholarship to attend the 4 week credit Swedish program. I had a lot of fun and learned so much. Next year, I plan on attending either Gustavus or Minnesota State University Mankato and hope to continue learning this language. Thank you for the assistance." So as you can see, this exposure to language and culture at early age prepares young people for a global future, whether it is to study or travel abroad or more fully engage with the multicultural diversity in their home communities. OHE is certainly imperative to this effort. And the summer enrichment program ensures that all students with a passion for world languages and cultures can have this experience. Thank you for your previous support, and I'm certainly happy to answer any questions if there is time. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have another testifier, and she's going to have to help me out with her name, but I believe Sandra Oluwafemi is with us today. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Madam Chair,
I do not see
the other testifiers. Okay. You may ask if they are attending. But,
thank you. Are there any other testifiers on this bill? Okay. Representative Noor, I would like to move into questions if any of our committee members have questions, and then I'll have you do closing remarks after that. And I will check out here if we have any questions from our committee members.
Before you do that, I'm wondering if Dr. Johnson,
did you have a comment to make?
Yes, I was wondering if we had another person to testify here.
I'll ask it one more time just to be sure. Thank you for making me aware there might be another person. Is there anyone else here to testify on this bill today on 1006? I do not hear anyone.
Somebody is trying to speak, but they look like they are having audio problems.
I see. Okay.
I think it's a parent from one of our summer programs whose children have attended.
Okay. Ms. David?
Yes.
Ms. David, are you able to unmute yourself? And did you want to testify
Madam Chair, it seems she's been having some technical difficulties with our audio.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I can try and connect with.
Okay, so we'll go to questions, and if we're able to gain connection with her, that would be wonderful, and we can call on her before we move into our next bill. Members, are there any questions? I do not see any members with any questions. Representative Noor, would you like to say some closing remarks? And if we do get Ms. David back on the line, we will let her provide her testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing this bill. This is a great program for the students. This is a great program which is based on the grade level for the students. This is a great program to help the low-income students who don't have that opportunity to attend a program during the summertime and expose them to post-secondary education. This is a great program to support our science programs for the interested students who are interested in STEM programs. Quite frankly, this will help students, as I stated, catch up, keep up, and also to be able to get ahead. Especially with the COVID-19 pandemic, we have seen how that has impacted many students, and this is an opportunity to give them once more a good summer program so that they can continue to thrive. So with that, Madam Chair, I will let you renew the motion for House File 1006 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. And there is a slim chance that Ms. Davids is on the line. Ms. Davids, are you on the line? Okay, well, we gave it a valiant effort, and I'm sure she did too, and I am sorry that we did not get you connected. Hearing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 1006 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Noor. Oh, now we are going to move to House File 825 from Representative Lee. I will move House File 825 to be laid over for possible inclusion. We now have before us House File 825. Representative Lee, welcome to the committee, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just wanted to preface that, Madam Chair, I just came back from the dentist, and so if I'm not making sense, I apologize for that. I'll be quick and just say thank you all for the committee's support of College Possible in the past and really allowing for this great program to help assist low-income Minnesota students to really have access and get on the path towards going to college and graduating. And this is personal for me, Madam Chair and members. A few of my siblings, we went through the program, and I understand the great work that it does for many of us. Just understanding the college application process is quite a task. And then something that I really value about College Possible was helping me find the different resources that could help me finance education and not worry and have that as a barrier for me going forward. And so I'll just leave it at that right now, and hopefully my testifiers will be able to explain a little bit more about the bill and share their perspective. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, Representative Lee, thank you for being here today, and you get extra bonus points and gold stars for being here after being at the dentist. With us today, we have Mr. Jeff Wilson. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Wilson. Could you please state your name and your organization for the record?
Yep, Jeff Wilson, Executive Director at College Possible Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair and esteemed representatives, and thank you, Representative Lee. College Possible programming begins in a student's junior year of high school. Our high school programming focuses on college knowledge, campus visits, ACT prep, college application assistance, FAFSA completion, navigating scholarships and financing college, financial literacy and the transition from high school into college. One of the unique things about our program is that we continue to support students until they graduate from college. Our college programming focuses on navigating the college landscape and accessing critical resources, understanding the unwritten rules of college, building self-advocacy skills, career readiness, and continued support in FAFSA completion, financing college, and financial literacy. Our results are outstanding. Last year, 99% of College Possible students were accepted into college. And while a recent National Student Clearinghouse report shows the number of 2020 high school graduates enrolling in college in the fall decreased by 22%, driven mostly by losses of lower income and urban high school students, our enrollment actually increased by 4%. And our college graduation rate has steadily increased every year over the last 5 years, with College Possible students three times more likely to graduate than their peers from similar economic backgrounds. In a recent survey that we conducted of College Possible program alumni 5 and 10 years out from their college graduation, shows five-year grads with a median individual income of $40,000 to $59,000 and over a third of 10-year grads with family incomes of $100,000 or more. 98% are employed, 94% have health insurance, and 83% are saving for their retirement. And importantly, over a third reported a debt load of less than $10,000. And on average, all respondents left college with less debt than their non-college possible peers. Now, the state of Minnesota has been an absolutely critical partner in our growth. With the support of the state, we've grown from working in 24 high schools to 65. And have grown our presence from the Twin Cities metro area to across greater Minnesota from Worthington to Mount Iron Buell. Your support in building our Navigate program, which is a tech-based and virtually administered version of our program to support students in greater Minnesota, also set us up to weather the pandemic very well. By having all of our curriculum already modified to deliver remotely and the infrastructure built and refined over the last 6 years, we were able to seamlessly move our entire program to a remote model and achieve the outstanding results that we did this year. And I'll just end my brief portion before turning it over to some other testifiers, and I wanna thank you all for your incredible support that you've provided and all that you've made possible for students in Minnesota. So thank you, Madam Chair and esteemed committee members.
Thank you for your testimony. Next with us is Zare Bang. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record.
Zare Bang, College Possible board member and program alumni. Thank you so much, Madam Chair and esteemed representatives. Again, my name is Zare Bang and I am a program alumna as well as a board member. I currently serve as the Director of Student Recruitment for the Morrison Family College of Health at the University of St. Thomas, and am currently pursuing my doctoral studies at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. College Possible has supported me since I was 16 years old with high intensive support with college applications, with financial aid, navigation support, and mental and personal support. I can honestly say that I don't think I would have pursued college or, you know, higher education in general without their early support. To give back, I've stayed in touch with College Possible. I've worked for them as a program coordinator and now serve as their board member and also part of the Alumni Leadership Council committee member. I have been able to support hundreds of students who have shared lived experiences as I and have been able to help them see that they too can access and graduate from college. As a board member, I am able to provide feedback and expertise in their programming and their strategic planning. As you know, coming through from an alumni lens, College Possible is really intentional about holding two seats on their board for program alumni as they bring in unique perspectives and experiences and expertise. And as an Alumni Leadership Council committee member, we are able to advise College Possible with their work in engaging our program alumni. being part of such an impactful organization has really influenced my career path. It has led me to work in higher education, working around access and retention, particularly with underrepresented students. It has also influenced my decision to go on to get my Master's of Social Work degree, as well as pursuing my PhD degree. You know, I've never really have imagined myself going to college, let alone pursuing my PhD. And this organization really helped me see that that was possible. I'm also a mother of two young children, 4 and 1. And I know that because I've gone to college, I will be able to help support them and get them through that really just stressful and challenging process. We need organizations like College Possible, people who care, people that the organization who is just so results oriented, and a organization that is so committed to leveling the playing ground for low income students. Thank you so much for your support. And I will end my testimony there.
I think you're on mute, Madam Chair.
There we go. Thank you. I would like to thank you for your testimony, Ms. Zervang, and welcome Tyrese Leverty to the committee. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and esteemed representatives. My name is Tyrese Leverty, and I'm a current College Possible student. Once again, please allow me to introduce myself as Tyrese Leverty. I use he, him, his pronouns, and I'm currently a senior at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, studying journalism, professional strategic communications, art, and interdisciplinary design. Today, I am here with you all to share my student story and to show you all how College Possible shaped my life trajectory and made it possible for me to be the soon-to-be graduate that you see before you today. I grew up in the southern Twin Cities suburbs, moving a total of 6 times before I even reached high school. We were a low-income household led by my late mother, who instilled in me, as you all know, the empower and importance of education. She always insisted that I make better than she did, make better choices than she did. That is, as a teen mother, she was not able to complete her own bachelor's degree. And in being that is, she did not have the necessary resources and knowledge to prepare me for higher education on her own. Luckily, Burnsville High School, my alumnus, is a College Possible partner, so driven by the will to complete our family's path to education that was stunted by my arrival to this world, I applied and joined the program leading into my junior year of high school. I stayed after school several nights a week for 2 years, learning, preparing for, and ensuring my journey to higher education. I had the opportunity to study test-taking strategies and take the ACT practice test more times than my financial circumstances would otherwise allow without College Possible. This improved my score and allowed me to become more academically competitive in my college applications. Thanks to the program, I thoroughly researched, visited, and was accepted into many colleges before narrowing it down to the University of Minnesota, which happened to be the same place that my CP coach went. Before I knew, it was time to make the move that I had long been working toward. With my mother's memory and lessons on my mind, I packed up my life and moved from the suburbs to the big city, that being Minneapolis, of course, and began classes at the U. This was a true test of my independence, as unlike my peers, college wasn't the natural next step for me. So when it came to my finances, housing, scheduling classes, I felt like I was all on my own for the first time. That was, of course, until I reached out to my CP mentor, who quickly became my source of stability and support throughout the ever-changing dynamics of college. I'd also been lucky enough to find a community within the crowd and other program students who were facing similar adversities to mine. After all, we all started 6 years ago together, and now, looking back, we're all finishing together 6 years later. Speaking of looking back, it's tough to imagine where or who I would be if not for the College Possible program and the dozens of supportive members by my side every step of the way. Now, I am also looking forward to beginning my career in the media and advertising industry this summer, thanks to the education, mentorship, and opportunities that were provided to me by the College Possible program. I share my story now on the College Possible panel for current high school students to inspire them to see that they can achieve anything they put their mind to. And I share it with you all today, carrying the hope that it will help you to see into the life of a current Minnesota high school, Minnesota student in education today. Madam Chair and esteemed representatives, I thank you kindly for hearing my testimony. May you have my time.
Thank you very much. And we do have our testifier from the last bill, and we will get to her after we're done with this bill. We will allow her to testify before we adjourn. So are there any other testifiers representatively? I know we have someone on hand to help. Did you want, I'll leave it up to you, Representative, who you would, else you have to testify.
I'm sure, I think that's all the testifiers okay. that we have.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We have Representative Erickson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Mr. Wilson, the Executive Director. I'm looking at your donor list, and it's very, very generously provided for. And so I'm wondering, what is your budget? And with this kind of generosity from the community and from couples and singles, why is it that we need to infuse state dollars? And I believe this is probably even in the base. Could you comment on that, please?
Mr. Wilson.
Yes, thank you for the question, Representative Erickson. I believe the first part of the question, budget, about $5.5 million is our annual budget. You know, it grows in waves a little bit each year, but this year we'll look at about $5.5 million in expenses. And the infusion of state money, really what that has enabled us to do is grow our program aggressively. I mentioned before we started partnering with the state in this work, we were at 24 high schools just in the metro area. And this has allowed us to grow to 65 high schools all across greater Minnesota and add high schools just throughout the entire state and reach more students where we know there has been need. And we feel really honored and privileged to be able to work with many more students in a much larger geographic region because of the support of the state, which has made that possible.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Wilson, this program has been in place since 2000, and I see that 6,200 or so students have been served. So, really, why do we need state dollars to be a part of this? Is that for marketing, or just how do those state dollars help complete this this program that gets students into college?
Absolutely,
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for your question again, Representative Erickson. I think if it's okay, I'll answer part of it, and then I would like to. Let my colleague Kumar Balasubramanian, who's with me, who might be able to add a little bit of context to it. The 6,200 students that you're seeing, that's in this is currently served. So over the 20 years of our existence, we've served many, many more than that. And so again, that 6,200 number is active in the College Possible program right now, both in high school and college. It's roughly broken down by currently 2,000 high school students and 4,000 college students that we're supporting in Minnesota. And I really, again, I think the state support here is what really has helped us and continues to support us to expand that work throughout the entire state into greater Minnesota and to reach more students in all across the state. But I would like to share some time with my colleague Kumar, who might be able to add a little bit of context to that as well, as he's done a lot of work in this area.
Welcome to the committee, Kumar Balasubramanian. Thank you. Hopefully I got that fairly close. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and your organization.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kumar Balasubramanian. I am the Director of Community Partnerships and Engagement at College Possible Minnesota. And thank you, Representative Erickson. I think that's an important question. In our reporting for the use of these funds each year, we pick a specific group of students. We call it our state appropriation cohort. So we have a group of about over 1,000 students who are directly funded by this work. And as Mr. Wilson mentioned, that growth was allowed by this funding. So, as an organization, one thing that I think we feel confident is, based on our numbers, 98% of our students got accepted into college last year. But there's lots of students who don't have that same level of mentorship or support throughout the state. And in particular, you know, rural poverty is a really real thing. And what we found when talking to our partners throughout the state was that the resources weren't as centrally located. You know, in a smaller community, they might not have access to the same level of resources. And we really wanted to be able to take our expertise and spread it to all different parts of the state as much as possible. And so from my perspective, the reason that the state funding is so valuable is not only that it helps us expand sort of our reach, but also that it helps us dig into communities that we might not otherwise be able to touch. One other thing that I think is important to note, just sort of generally about the programming, is the continuation piece. So, you know, there's not very many programs out there that follow their students all the way through graduation and even beyond graduation, touching into our alumni networks. And as those are folks who are throughout the state and professionals throughout the state, this funding makes a really big difference in our ability to sort of keep that pipeline from high school all the way to career very strong.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Wilson, back to you. So if the state were not to infuse this, the governor's asking for $550,000 each of the years of the biennium, would the donations dry up or would they increase? I mean, it's always interesting because it seems to me that when I'm out and about, folks talk about wanting to be generous, giving to a program that they know is going to succeed because they're an integral part of it. But when the state then gets involved, it's like they pull back and say, well, the state of Minnesota is going to put in that, then I guess I won't put in as much. So, you know, donations, I think, are dictated by the extent to which an organization like College Possible can make it on its own. And I'm just asking these questions because I'm curious. It's not that I probably don't support the program, but, you know, I'm always curious about to what extent do people pull back their donations when they know the state of Minnesota is going to put dollars in. If you would just respond to that, thank you.
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you, Representative Erickson, for your question. If I may, I'll just touch on one thing from the previous question that I don't think I or Kumar addressed, which was, I think he asked, how does that money get spent and is it marketing or whatever? Most of our money, almost 90% of it goes right into student programming. It's either for the staffing that it takes because we're such an intensive program and students get a lot of one-on-one mentoring. Most of the money goes into the either the staffing cost to do that or the direct materials that we need for students. So almost all of it goes into direct programming. So that's how the money is spent, generally speaking. You're absolutely right. We have very generous donors. I think the community that we're in believe in the programming and want to be a part of it and see the value that it provides and are generous with their support. What I have observed in my conversations with donors, I spend a lot of my time fundraising, so I'm talking to donors quite frequently. And I think one of the things that I have observed with our donors anyway, in terms of their thinking about our relationship and state funding, is it gives them even more confidence. I think when they see that the state is investing in this and well, they see it as an opportunity to really engage in a public-private partnership and utilize all the resources so that we can reach as many students as possible, knowing that the need still outweighs our ability to serve students and the resources that we have. I guess nobody has a crystal ball, but if the state money were not to come in, I would not see, I think that would pose a challenge for us to continue our work in Greater Minnesota because it is such an integral part of that work. And I see the support of the state as making that, again, that growth possible and allowing us to reach beyond what we have been able to reach historically. But overall speaking, I think the beauty of, you know, when I look at our revenue stream to meet our expenses, what gives me confidence in what I am excited about is the diversification of individual revenue, corporate revenue, foundation revenue, state revenue, and that there are a lot of different people partnering to make the work possible at this scale.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
One last question, Mr. Wilson. So what's the demographic? Because I know these are low-income students, and I'm so glad that they can get this kind of counseling, this kind of support, because that is really important when they don't maybe understand the path that you have to take to get admitted to a college and then to succeed in college. I've read at least one of the success stories in the report and found that just really amazing. But what's the demographic other than low income? Is there a diverse range of ethnicities, for example?
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you, Representative Erickson, for your great question. Yes, so as you mentioned, all the students in our program would qualify as low income. The demographic, there's a few ways we look at it. One is just sort of generally speaking, about 90% roughly are students of color. And I will say I don't have these numbers right in front of me, and we'd be happy to follow up with the exact demographic breakdown, but I'll be close. I can give you a general idea of the breakdown. So about 90% students of color, about 90% as well will be the first in their families to go to college. And then the breakdowns, it's around 30% Black African American, about upward 20% Latinx, about mid 20s to 30% Hmong and Asian, and then I want to say this is one where I'm not exactly sure. It's about 10 to 15% white, and then there's some other kind of 1 to 2% in some other groups. I want to just be really clear, that is, I don't have those numbers in front of me, so that's close. So don't quote me on that, and we would be happy to follow up with the exact demographic breakdown of our current cohort of students following the hearing.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, Mr. Mm-hmm. Wilson. I think this has been very important for us to learn about this program. You know, I'm a newcomer to this committee, so I'm curious, but I like what you've told us in regard to the demographic. That's very important, and the fact that these are low-income young people who we want to succeed and college is possible for them. Thank you very much.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions as well. So I spent quite a bit of my career working at nonprofits, and so if I was to look at your most recent 990 filing, wondering if you could tell me what is your percentage for administration, fundraising, and programming? So what do you remember what your percentage is in each of those? And the reason I ask is because you had said about 90% of this money goes directly into the programming. So that is a bit problematic because here at the state, when we do things, we typically supply, we allocate about 5%. Usually not much more than that. There are specific instances and reasons why we might do more than a 5% administrative allocation to a state agency to administrate a program. And so just by your quick, and maybe you were not being very specific on your percentage, but if it is only 90% going to direct programming, well, that may sound good. That's actually a bit higher than we would allow here at the state. So I'm wondering if you could tell us what your administration, fundraising, and programming breakdowns are for your most recent 990. And then I do, just to make it quick, I also have a quick question for the author of the bill, wondering what year that the state funding started. So I know that College Possible has been around since 2000, but what year did they start receiving state funding? And the final question I have, again, to the author is your asking to more than double their current appropriation, and I'm wondering why it's such a big jump. Can you talk about how many more students that you would be able to serve, or you know, what is the reason for the appropriation? Even it's just a little bit more than double. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we have two questions from Representative O'Neill, and the first one is for Mr. Wilson, and then we'll take Representative Lees. Mr. Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill, for your great question. Yeah, I don't have the exact 990 in front of me, and I won't be able to tell you right now the exact, you know, to the percent, you know, or point percent of exactly the administration fundraising programming breakdown. Again, we're happy to get that, and we can follow up and make sure we get that exact breakdown into the hands of the committee so you can see it and take a look at that. What I will say is, when we've looked at our comparison to sort of industry standards for the breakdown and what a nonprofit would be spending in terms of direct program support versus administration and fundraising, we're right in line with the industry standard. And in fact, I think outperform in many areas in comparison to many other programs. So it's around that. It's a very high percentage, I think comparatively to the industry standard. And a number that, as I've talked with donors who are giving to the organization, are quite comfortable with. And so to get you the exact numbers, we'll follow up in whatever the right mechanism is to make sure that you can take a close look at exactly what that breakdown is.
Okay. Representative Lee, do you are you able to answer that last question? Remember what it was?
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, I will have to defer to College Possible to talk about when they first received funding. I know that last biennium, Representative Vang was a member of the Higher Ed Committee, and she carried the bill for them. And I will say that, you know, as not a recipient, but as somebody that went through the program, I really see the value in this. And supporting some of those students that Representative Erickson have mentioned, you know, some of our lowest income Minnesotans, some of them are first generation, just like myself. And so that's why, for me, as a member of the legislature, I feel like this is a priority for myself, and that we should, you know, have really consider this as we move forward, and really making sure that students, regardless of where they're from and their background, if they are meeting some of these eligibility, being some of the lowest income Minnesotans, that they have the opportunity to pursue higher education. And so to the direct question, I will refer back to College Possible.
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill, again for your question. I'm not going to have the exact date for when we first received state funding. My colleague Kumar may have been, I wasn't in the Minnesota office. I worked in our national office before I moved to our Minnesota site. So when we first started state funding, I wasn't in the Minnesota site. It was my guess is probably about 5 to 6 years ago. So when I mentioned in my testimony that we launched what is now called our Navigate program, which is the virtual version of our program that we use to deliver our curriculum all throughout greater Minnesota, the state was very instrumental in helping to make that possible. And we're in our sixth year of that. So I believe that it was right about that time when we first started receiving money from the state. So I'd say about 6 years ago. But that's another thing I'm happy to follow up with on the exact timeline of that, so you can see exactly when that funding began. And then Kumar, I don't know if you have anything, just because you've been in the Minnesota site a bit longer than I have, if there's something different that you'd want to add to that.
Mr. Balasubramanian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Yes, I believe that 2016 was the first year that we started receiving funding through the Office of Higher Education. And the steady growth in funding has been a direct sort of result of more students being served. So with our, I believe in 2018, our funding was lower, and when we doubled, we were able to support double the amount of students. So we initially had been reporting on 600 students that were funded directly from this programming. And in our last 2 years in the last budget, we were reporting on 1,200 students. So that money is sort of directly tied to more students being supported by these funds.
Okay, Representative O'Neill, I'm assuming that we got your two questions answered. And
Madam Chair, actually, I need a follow-up now that I got the answer.
And we'll need to like about a minute for that, and we can come back if we need to. We have other members that would like to ask questions, and we'll need to move on and have about
Madam
5
Chair.
Minutes for each member. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I do, I know that we have a House fiscal staff here, to Mr. Savory, if he could look into that and provide that information so that we're not, you know, going back and forth with College Possible. I think that'd be great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And did you have a question that you wanted that could take a minute, or would you want to come back to Representative O'Neill?
I just have a very short thing.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my suggestion is that we do what we do with many grant programs, and that is to put language in that would limit the administrative cost to 5% of this program. So I would ask the author if he would include that language like we do in nearly every grant program, which is to limit how much money can be spent on administrating the program. And then I also would like a report back to the legislature, a report back as to how the funds were used and how many students were served, and a copy of the most recent 990, if they could include that. Thank you.
Okay, Representative O'Neill, the bill is going to be laid over. So thank you for your remarks. We will take note to that. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lee for allowing this bill to be heard today. I've heard a lot of conversation about the costs of the program, and that's something that we always want to be attentive to. But in listening to Mr. Leberty and Ms. Vang, there are so many benefits. I mean, the thing that we are not talking about today is that if you have a high school diploma, and these are averages, I know there are exceptions to every statement that we make, but you know, the national average is if you have a high school diploma, you'll earn about $30,000 to $35,000. And if you have a bachelor's degree, you will earn $60,000 to $65,000. Now, these are averages in different degrees, right? So to lift people up to be able to have wages that can truly support your two children, Ms. Vang, is really critical. To lift people out of that lower socioeconomic rung and help build generational wealth for families to come is an exponential value that I'm not hearing discussed in this conversation, but it's really critical. The other piece, when we talk about how we maximize the benefit of state dollars, what I'm hearing in the conversation that Mr. Wilson and, Kumar, I'll use your first name, are talking about is the fact that they can use this state investment and leverage it for many, many more dollars. And that is a very positive ripple effect that we can use to benefit all of our students and help them complete college so that they are not accruing massive debt without a result at the end of their time. And I'm hearing that your students, if I heard the testimony correct, are coming out with lower debt. And I'm assuming there, when you help them get into college, you also help them apply for every possible grant that they could qualify for and scholarship that they could qualify for. So that, as I'm listening to the services that you provide, I'm thinking we should probably be expanding this into the middle class as well to help people deal with that. How do you maximize your dollar in college? The other piece that I'm not hearing in this conversation today is that if you, and we've seen this in COVID, right? If you have a bachelor's degree, you're more likely to be able to work from home and be able to ride out this pandemic or other economic stresses that we have. Whereas if you remain at the lower socioeconomic level, your unemployment rate is much higher. So these are benefits of the program that I think we also need to be having in the debate today about the value of this bill, which I do support representatively. And then the other side of it is, without this investment in our families, what would be the opportunities and the brain power that we as a state are losing, right? We're not capturing the full value of the person who would maybe otherwise not be educated. So I think it's a bigger conversation than just, okay, what is this number on this spreadsheet? There is an intrinsic value to the dignity of the individuals who are being ushered through the process, and then the full life cycle of that individual and how they have been lifted up out of poverty. So thank you, Representative Lee, and for your testifiers for coming today.
Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to each of the testifiers. I've been involved with College Possible for a number of years and have written recommendations for young men and women who have participated. I am concerned a little bit about the work that seems to be duplicated, I guess, with a lot of programs. Most programs, however, provide their services to young men and women who are sophomores, juniors, and seniors in high school rather than try to support and mentor them through college. You mentioned that you have about 1,200 students that you've been working with this year, and I wonder what services you offer them while they are in college and help them to graduate. Could you tell me a little bit about that, Mr. Wilson, please?
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. I will actually, if it's okay, kick the beginning of this question to my colleague Kumar, who has worked for years directly on the program team. And then Kumar, when you're done, if there's other things to add, I'll be happy to jump back in. But Kumar has been directly in that for quite some time. So we'll, Kumar, if you want to take this one.
Mr. Balasubramanian. Well, please proceed.
Yes, thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. So I do think one of the really unique components of our work is our work with college students. And unlike high school students, where it's a little bit linear, the college path sort of goes all over the place. And so our college curriculum is designed more on specific types of support that a student might need. Some of them are more common to happen in their freshman year, or more common to happen in their senior year, but each student is on their own individual path. And so our coaches are equipped to, let's say the situation is financial. The student has a hold because they didn't pay their academic or their balance, their financial balance. And so they have a hold on registering for their classes next year. Our coaches are equipped to help support that student to identify all of the opportunities that exist to help with that funding, whether it's connecting with the financial aid office of that college, whether it's seeking outside scholarships, or whether it's working more with the FAFSA or other loan providers to make sure that they're able to continue with their college process. So finances are one really big part of the process. Another really key element is the social aspect of college. Students heading off to college, many of those colleges being primarily white institutions, and majority of our students being students of color, there is often a sense of imposter syndrome or challenges making connections on a college campus. And our coaches are equipped to help make sure that our students know about the student groups that exist there to support them, to make sure that they're connecting with their academic advisors, to make sure that they're talking to their professors, to make sure that they know all the different ways that they can get engaged on their college campus to feel a part of that community. Academics are another really critical component of our college curriculum. And it's not that we provide direct tutoring or support for students. That's not really our focus. Really what we do is serve as a connector on that college campus. There are tons of resources that every college have that often go underutilized by all students, and particularly for students who come from underrepresented backgrounds who might not be encouraged to seek out those resources by other folks in their community simply because they just don't know that they exist. That's where our coaches step in. They say, hey, you're really struggling on your English course. Let's connect you to the Writing Center to make sure that you have a tutor on your campus to support you. And oftentimes that looks like making that connection for a student. Asking for help can be really, really challenging, especially at that collegiate level where you sort of have this expectation that I'm an adult now, I'm independent, I shouldn't need help. And a big role that our coaches play is help be that connector and let them know it's important to ask for help, and here's who you can ask that help directly to. I can talk about this for a really long time because I'm super passionate about it, but I'll say one thing that we've been really focused on recently is our career readiness, right? So college graduation is the end goal for our programming, but it's not the end goal for our students. Our students are using that college experience to leverage that for a career that is financially sustainable and also is something that they care about as well. And so we've dove really deep into how do we prepare our students for the workforce. So this year we've had a number of virtual events, including an internships workshop, an alumni panel where we had students sort of similar to Representative Lee and Zerving come back to say, hey, here's where I am now after graduating college, and here's path that I took to get there, let me answer your questions about the industry that you're most interested in. So that is a big part of our college programming and the things that we focus on. And we really do try to individualize it for each student. The last thing I would mention is that 100% of the funding from the Office of Higher Education goes directly to our program. So just so you all know, not a single dollar from the state goes to our administrative costs. While we do have administrative costs, we do not use any of the Office of Higher Ed funding to do that.
Okay, thank you. We are now going to move on to Representative Albright. You have like 3 minutes and we'll move to Representative Mason so that we can get to our testifier from the other one. So Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief in my comments and I'll be directed to the author of the bill. Representative Lee, the first point that I would articulate is one Representative O'Neill brought up in the conversation and the line of questioning that she posed. And I will reference back to Representative Knorr's bill that we just heard before your introduction. And it's interesting that in his bill, he does include language that limits the administrative fees in his program, or the one that he's proposing, to 3%. So I don't think that it's out of line for Representative O'Neill to suggest that, and I would certainly hope that you take that under strong consideration. Representative Lee, looking more for your response to a couple of comments or observations that I would make. But I think it's somewhat interesting that the program that you espouse, you know, that you propose in this bill really is an extension of that which you know, should be already happening, whether it be in the high school or in this setting, the secondary or higher educational programs in support of career counseling, in support of, you know, and we spend an awful lot of time in this committee talking about the funding that we provide to higher ed, whether it be independent colleges, the MNSCU system of the University of Minnesota. So in that situation, isn't it a bit of a sad indictment that that's not already happening in those institutions and we have to curry the favor or support and or supplant the funding that we should be putting towards those programs to support a nonprofit of this nature? And that's not anything against this organization. It sounds like they do great work. But I would like for your feedback on that. And to finally, Representative Lee, if you could just speak to the fact that if this is in fact a venerable program, there obviously must be other systems out there and other entities out there that support a similar focus. And so what would you say to the support of making this program a competitive grant program as opposed to a unilateral support of one mission entity? And I'll conclude there and wait for Representative Lee's response. Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. And I think to the last piece, I was, you know, certainly entertained, you know, the option, if there are other programs that are similar like this, you know, for them to come forward so that, you know, we as the legislature have the opportunity to engage in this conversation. And, you know, as the chief author of this bill, I, you know, haven't really heard from any other entity that are doing similar work. And so hopefully the chair and the committee, you know, if you are hearing, if there are other proposals that you will consider that. And, you know, to the first questions around putting a cap, I think that's certainly something that we could explore. And, you know, Chair Bernardi have said that the bill is being laid over and that she is taking note as the chair. And so I will work with the chair and Representative O'Neill and any other members of the committee who are interested in this. And to the second question, you know, thank you for the question, Representative Albright. I think that that's a discussion that, you know, we as the legislature should certainly talk about. You know, what can we do to provide the resources for our schools and so that they could actually carry out that mission of really preparing all of our students so that they don't have to worry about, you know, not having the connection or because of my financial situation, similar to, you know, the experience of my siblings, myself, that we don't think that higher education is something that's for us, you know, unless it was like through, it was for, you know, programs like College Possible that made it possible for me to, you know, dream beyond just that high school graduation and get into, you know, the workforce and really see that higher education. Ms. Vang have said that too, that, you know, that's something that we can aspire to. And I'm glad to see Ms. Celebrity here to talk about, you know, his own experience and how this is opening a door for him to really look into a different career path that maybe, you know, Ms. Celebrity and Ms. Vang might share, you know, similar sentiment with me, you know, when I was growing up, that I'm going to get my high school graduation, my diploma, and then start working right away just to support my family. And, you know, fortunately for me, I'm able to pursue a higher education, and here am I at the legislature and working with all of you. And so I think that's definitely a conversation that the Higher Education Committee and, you know, the E12 committee should have going forward. And so thank you for the question, Representative Albright.
Representative Mason, and you have like 3 minutes. I'd like to get on to have Representative Lee wrap up and then move on to our testifier, give her 3 minutes to testify. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments, and especially something that Representative Lee had said before. When you're the first person in your family to go to college, that means you're coming from gross assumption here, but my guess is probably most of your background are other people that have not gone to college as well. And, you know, I remember talking with my roommate years after we graduated, thinking how lucky kids were now to have all these various programs and opportunities. And her comment was, well, we were both first people to go to college from our families, so we didn't have the background or the help to really take advantage of some of the opportunities that might have been there. So, you know, it's really refreshing to know that that students now are getting the extra counseling that will help them maximize the opportunities that they have when they go into college or get into higher education. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lee, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and Representative Mason, thank you for that too. And I'll just share that, you know, for me, when I was growing up in North Minneapolis, the only way that I saw an opportunity for me to go into higher education was if I get a scholarship for sports. And knowing that, you know, I'm not very athletic, I thought that I won't be able to pursue higher education. And College Possible made it happen for me and for four of my siblings. Two of my older sisters are, you know, they have attained their graduate degree, and two of my other siblings, like myself, we have our undergraduate degree. We're the first one in my family to, you know, get into higher education. And this has opened the door for a lot of my nieces and nephews to even to start thinking about the possibility for them. And, you know, this is a generational impact that we're making here, you know, the investment that we're putting into this program. And so just want to say thank you all to our testifiers, especially Ms. Vane, Ms. Liberty, for coming by to share their experience. And Madam Chair, hopefully all of you will consider this proposal going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee, for your bill and working to create opportunities for young people and help them be successful. Really appreciate your testimony today and all the testifiers. Thank you very much. And with that, I, with no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 825 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you. Okay, we have someone who was here that wasn't able to get on for our first bill and so we will, as a courtesy and information, we will allow her to testify. We have about 3 minutes or so to be able to testify before we wrap up the committee. So Ms. Oluwafemi, and I know I'm not saying your name right, please, state your name and your affiliation for the record. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Sandra Oluwafemi, and I'm affiliated to this program in terms of the help the program has given my five children. I have five children, and the five of them so far have gotten your OH money, which helped them went through this program. The first one right now to speak is an accountant in O'Mell at Austin, Minnesota. The second one is Faith, and as I speak right now, she's in medical school. And this program has helped her tremendously as a woman of color. She went through this program from the middle school, from ninth grade, all the way to 12th grade. And this program helped her in very, very phenomenal ways. She's a strong woman, a woman of color, a woman that is proud to attend the summer enrichment program at St. Cloud University. And I even spoke to her yesterday about this testifying process, if she can be a part of it. But unfortunately, she is in class as we speak right now. There is no way she could do it, but she was very, very, very excited to be a part of this program. I also have Gabriel, as I speak, is also in Oxford University doing computer programming. He has this interest right from when he started the summer program at St. Cloud University. And up to now, he's doing phenomenally well at the program at college. I have my fourth child, which is Grace Oluwafemi. She's a fifth grader right now. And as I speak to you, she attends Rogers Elementary STEM Magnet School here in Rogers. She's also a very strong student. And this is going to be her third year in a row attending the summer enrichment program at St. Cloud State University. Even at her age, she's just 11 years old, and she's already telling me already how she envisioned herself to be a medical doctor in future. That is very phenomenal to have an 11 years old with such a vision because of the STEM program she went through at St. Cloud State University. And the last one I have is Samuel is going to be 8 years old on the 13th of this March, 2021, and is also a strong student in math, in science, in technology and engineering. And as I speak right now, I already have the application from St. Cloud State University to enroll in this year program coming this summer. And this is going to be his first time ever going to St. Cloud State University for this program. He's very excited about it because he knows that his older siblings went through this process, went through this program, and they are all succeeding. They are all doing excellently well, and he himself cannot wait to be in that same pathway. So even as I speak right now, I have Grace right here with me, the fifth grader. She just came back from school, and she knows about what is going on right now. And she's telling me right here, Mom, I have one or two things to say about the summer enrichment program with the help of the OHE funding. So I don't know if you want me to give her this minute to say one or two things, if it's okay with you. Otherwise, I'll let it pass.
That would be wonderful. We have a minute for her to share, talk with us. So that would be great. And if she could say her name for the record. And
all right. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Grace. I am in fifth grade.
Can you say your name again? Can you say your name again, Grace?
Grace Oluwafemi. I am in fifth grade. I am 11 years old, and I attend Rogers Elementary STEM Magnet School. And I just wanted to say thank you for the OHE department for helping me and thousands of other people in the world, the people that couldn't really afford this program. And I'm very thankful for you guys and the program because it's really helping me. And it really helped my siblings also, as you heard my mom explained their background and what they're doing right now. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Grace Oluwafemi. I'm trying so hard. And for your mother today, we really appreciate your testimony. Thank you so much. We are glad that you were able to, we were glad you were able to get on, and now we need to adjourn our meeting. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all you do. We appreciate all your help.
You're welcome. Well, thank you, members. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.